Hello, and welcome to the next episode of the Cordex Digital Shipping Podcast. My name is Leo Grayson, and I'll be your host today. Today, we are meeting with another colleague here at Cordex, Hong Tinwei, Head of Partnerships and Finance. Tinwei will be sharing his experience with us from working with multinational ship owners, operators, and charterers, giving insight into how Cordex came to be, from ideation to creation, and then offering advice to current and new ventures in the maritime industry on how they can scale and have a chance at being successful. Good morning, Tinwei. Thank you for joining us for the next edition of our podcast.
Hello, hello. My name is Tinwei. Glad to be here.
Why don't we start with you telling us a little bit about your background and what's your role here at the Cordex family?
Sure. I have been in the shipping offshore sector for a while now. Initially started with a refining company and then gradually moving to various commodity and shipping company. Have always been working on the investment part of shipping and offshore assets. And I'm now today working on digital product, which is very exciting, but also very daunting for me personally.
So you have quite a fancy role at Cordex, Head of Partnership and Business Development and Finance. So what do you focus on?
Well, it's the kind of role that you give oneself when you don't really know what you want to do.
Okay.
I would say that really apart from product development and engineering, everything else comes to us, the team of four. So among four of us, we do everything from business development to sales, execution, to marketing, to generating social media attention on our product, on our company, on basically generally where the industry is heading into. So every day is a different day. Mm-hmm. There's no day job per se. Every day we come in and we think about what we should do best for the company and how we can propel the company forward. And with that, every day comes with its different set of challenges.
Excellent. Thank you. So Tinwei, you're one of very few, if not the only person who's been with Cordex since conception. Can you tell us how Cordex came to be, kind of what the original image was, or vision, I should say, and how that's played out?
Yeah, definitely. I think Cordex Genesis came about in 2018 when we were part of a larger organization and we were thinking about generally how to utilize digitalization to continuously make their shipping operation relevant for the future. There weren't so much of an idea. There weren't so much about where are we heading. But I guess, there's a few things that the market had been doing already and they all look pretty exciting. But I think one of the main thing that we kind of gone back to was to look at our own operation and to see where all the pain points are. And we sort of got them from there. But I remembered that there are two distinct experiences that I had that kind of gave Cordex the product where we have today. I think I was on board one of the FMXs that we had trading around the Houston area at that time. And coincidentally, when I was on the vessel, something happened. And it was at a point in time when the vessel was trying to go after a cargo and the repair of the offending machine took about 6 hours. And during that 6 hours, it was so exciting to see the flurry of activity suddenly, generate because everybody's just gonna have to get the ship moving.
Yes.
But I mean, if I would be true to myself, a large part of that 6 hours that it took to resolve that problem, gone into just making sure everybody along the value chain understand what the problem is. So therein lays a huge problem of trying to get a very basic piece of information and make sure everybody knows it from the get-go. But personally for me, what was a very memorable event was I remember that I had to service my car, a sedan, right after a very long flight. And it was, I don't know whether it was memorable because I had to service my car after a long flight or the fact that it was the experience that was memorable. But the entire maintenance and service of my car took probably large part of 2 hours, and an hour and a half was spent on making sure that the car is performing right and then effecting the maintenance and all that. But what was most memorable was the service engineer came out in a relatively clean boiler suit. Coolly plug in his computer into my car, and within 5 minutes knows exactly what had went wrong with my car between the last time when he saw my car and the time when I was standing in front of him. Knows exactly how many times the car had misfired, how efficient was combustion vis-a-vis not when the car first rolled out from the factory, but from the last time when I last saw him. And I remember, while waiting to pay for my maintenance, thinking to myself, if we can do maintenance this way for $60,000 Toyota, why can't we do it for a $90 million vessel?
Of course.
Yeah. So that had been like a very enlightening moment for me on what needs to happen in the shipping sector, at least.
So when you had that realization, that epiphany, whatever you want to call it, how did you communicate that to the broader team when you were
exactly like how I said it to you just now?
And what was the reaction?
I said I had a technician brought on a laptop, plugged into the computer, and in 5 minutes, do you think you can do that on a VLCC?
And did everyone have the same reaction as you?
Oh yeah, I mean, you know, and after that, of course, I realized that there are actually newer vessels around that could actually do that, but not so conveniently. And then, you know, the nuances of having to develop a product for marine applications comes along, and you have a bit of a reality check. But the truth remains unchanged that it is so much easier to perform a diagnostic on a $60,000 car than it is to on a $90 million vessel, which essentially uses similar combustion technology.
Yeah. As you mentioned, Tinwei, you have quite a few years of experience within the maritime industry in a few different capacities. To you, or in your opinion, what makes maritime one of the key industries globally that's ripe for disruption?
I think if I may, it is more about the fact that these new digitalization tools are now ripe for maritime application.
Okay.
The product that we are that we're producing today and developing, it's hardly a novel product, and it has been in application in other industry, you know, the defense industry, semicon industry, utility, nuclear plants, fighter jets, what have you. I mean, someone was telling me a few months ago that, you know, as a Boeing plane is coming into the airport today, the ground staff actually knows what needs to be replaced and have that part ready when a plane lands and, you know, going on board to effect the repair. So whatever that we're developing, at least the goal of which is not normal, it's been applied. I think for shipping, because shipping is such a commoditized service, and many of the times you kind of go out in the market and people tell you that, yeah, it's really a taxi service. You know, the container lines are a bus service. They go on port to port to port, whereas like a tanker or dry bulk carrier just basically asks the client, hey, where do you want me to ship this to?
Yep.
So it's a taxi service. So in that respect, shipping has always been a very margin challenge sector, especially after the Lehman Brothers crash of 2009, where you had an abundance of supply. So naturally, for a sector that is margin challenge, you also don't have excess funds to dwell with the exciting stuff, the unknown, you know, the stuff that would, in all probability, help you perform better. So you just don't have the fund for that. But but what had happened over the years is that through the application in other higher value industry, the cost of implementing these technologies has come down to a point where it starts to meet the maritime economics.
Okay.
And which is why I would say that it is more about the cost of implementing that technology has kind of come down to a point where it is relevant for the maritime application.
So obviously cost is a big factor in a lot of these solutions for maritime, but yes, would you say there's any other factors that make now a more relevant time? Do you think it's maybe an industry mindset has changed? Anything else that could have...
Great point that you brought up. Yes, most definitely. In the last 3 to 4 years, and we have seen it gaining a lot of traction, especially in the last two, is how to make shipping sustainable.
Yep.
There's a lot of emphasis poured from various global NGOs, and it's going to make sure that shipping, being the backbone of the global economy, is sustainable and relevant for the future. That we cannot that we cannot continue to do things the way they are, and continue to pollute the environment with our activities. And that's why there's the IMO 2030 that comes along with the lofty goal of reducing 40%, if I think, of the emission vis-a-vis certain benchmark targets. And there's no silver bullets. There's no one convenient silver bullet for any shipper to achieve that. And what Cordex is we are providing a product that allows our user, the user may not achieve the target by using our product alone. Like I said, there's no silver bullet, but we can certainly bring our user one step closer towards the ultimate goal.
So moving from large multinational shipowners and operators to a startup like Cordex, what are some of the key duties that you have brought over to impact and influence your role in Cordex?
It's funny that you say that. I think when we first started Cordex, arguably in 2018, it was the most, I think I mentioned it earlier in one of the earlier questions, that it was perhaps one of the most daunting part of my career.
Okay.
I think for a period of at least 3 to 4 months, literally every day when I step into the meeting room full of these very talented product developers, engineers in the digital space, I realized that I've got nothing to contribute. You know, and it was very daunting to me, okay, because there's nothing that in my knowledge depository that I could take out and put on the table and say, yeah, this is what I know and this is my experience. Nothing. I was kind of relegated to I then took on a role of kind of understanding the other side.
Okay,
you know, what building digital product is. What is it that digital product developers hold true among many other things? What's important to them? And how to articulate the digital product better to the user? And I think that kind of happened for the first 3 to 4 months. And then things start to change a little when we had a verifiable proof of concept that we actually applied onto a sandbox vessel.
Okay.
And then that was kind of like, I think personally has changed because the product then went from developmental stage where it's still undergoing development, but really now you want to take that product and apply it to your customer's operation. And then that's kind of like my role came in, and we said, you know, start to find my little niche of activity. I start to be that conduit,
yeah,
you know, between the actual user who's going to use the product with the people who are developing them, because very often each other get lost in their own translation,
yep,
and you just kind of have to make it intuitive for people to understand, and that's kind of like my role at the beginning of the career. But of course now, now that our product is mature, it's been installed across so many vessels, my role has changed. And it's not just about my expertise. I think it's no secret that while we have a whole product engineering team made out of these very talented individuals, the business side of affairs, the marketing side of people, mainly made up of people who had spent many years in maritime, mm-hmm. in shipping, in oil and gas, offshore. And I think that's very important because we are like I said, that conduit, and it's ever so important now to bring the product and able to speak in that maritime language to make sure that people understand the product that we're trying to build.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of like where I see my role or my team's role in the entire works of things.
So three, almost 4 years later, we're now a team of 35 plus, growing.
Yes.
Every month we're installing on more and more vessels.
Mm-hmm.
Looking back to those 3 and 4 months where it was very daunting, mm-hmm. what would you have told yourself or other tinways that are in similar situations to how, what would you say to be able to get through those 3-4 months?
I wouldn't have changed a thing. I wouldn't have changed a thing. And to anyone who is going to step out of their comfort zone and getting to somewhere that they don't, I would say be that sponge. Be ready to be that very dry sponge,
mm-hmm.
you know, to be put into that pail of water and absorb as much as possible.
Just have the right mindset.
Have the right mindset. Get on in and try to chip in the you know, every way that you do. You know, if you can't do anything else, I don't know, pick up a broom and start sweeping and try to listen in to all those conversations so that you know what how things are happening, how people are building that product.
Of course.
And because it's just so much at the initial developmental stage when it's mostly about developing a product,
mm-hmm.
I think that's kind of like when we have all that developers kind of putting their head together and cranking out that product.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, beyond that, it's about how receptive
mm-hmm.
our customer
yep.
is going to be on that product. After they get sold on that product, we're going to have to help them manage the change. So very often, I think our customer would then say that, you know, you hear this all the time, that our customer talk about the management of change.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, our customers, or at least the users in our customer corporates, are those very managers of change.
Mm-hmm.
So I think on our side, on the Codex side, our marketing team, our business development team, is then the advisor of that change. We advise the customer how to use that product, knowing where they want to go to, and you know, perhaps maybe through our experience with other ship owner, then advise later clients on maybe the path of least resistance.
Yeah. Okay. As a quick recap for those that are joining us this morning, now we are meeting with Hong Tinwei, head of partnership and finance here at Codex, discussing his experiences in the maritime industry and how to successfully create new ventures in this space. So moving on, Tinwei, what would be 3 things that startups in maritime or in general must achieve in, say, their first 12, 18 months in order to have any chance of being successful?
Everything.
Everything.
Everything. Everything. Developing a startup and making sure that it is a success, it's like trying to grow a plant out of a seedling.
Okay.
And when it becomes a sapling, the first time when the leaf breaks through that mold of the earth and it get exposed to the element, that's how I would describe a startup. Because from that point on, that little fledging sapling is exposed to all the elements. So there are perhaps 10,000 things that is exogenous to its sphere of control. This new absolutely has got no control over it. Case in point would be this little thing called COVID-19 that
okay.
we've been experiencing for the last 18 to coming to 24 months now. And nobody knows. It is a game changer. It is a game changer for a large blue chip company, you know, listed on NYSE, and it is then exponentially more challenging for a sapling, because not only do we not know what we can control internally, we also all the assumption that we had around our potential customer just kind of got thrown out of the window because you're no longer sure whether those assumptions still hold relevant in this COVID era or post-COVID era. And certainly it makes business development that much more difficult because our customers' strategic horizon has effectively shortened.
Okay.
They couldn't look beyond the horizon because COVID-19 is such a watershed event that everybody's kind of taking a let's see attitude. So I think, especially in the last 18 months, COVID-19 has been that exogenous factor that kind of came in like a sledgehammer, and really there's nothing that you could do to prepare yourself for that event. But that being said, there are a few things that we must do to make sure that that we give the sapling, the startup, the best chance of success. And I think it hasn't changed from what I think was before COVID and now, but because of the situation right now, it just makes them all the more important. It just makes them all the more pertinent.
Have to be a bit more aggressive.
How to be more aggressive, yeah. I think first among most is within the first 12 months, you must make sure that you build a very scalable product.
Okay.
I think everybody heard about how you must make sure that when you have an idea of a product, that the idea is desirable towards resolving certain pain. Mm-hmm. And I think you need to, because it's such a intuitive thing to do, so ascertaining that desirability needs to happen very quickly. And then, of course, the next step is to make sure that the product is, or the idea is actually viable. It's viable technologically, it's viable commercially. And so, so all these questions around viability needs to be established pretty fast. But what is then a lot more difficult to do is to develop a product or POC that is scalable, both commercially and operationally. And that, I think, because of the situation that we're in right now, you're going to have to hasten that process, mm-hmm. make sure that you get onto the path where your product is scalable. And being scalable operationally is a lot more difficult than just kind of like making sure that your product gets installed without a hitch. Because you need to look at what is the new horizon beyond the next 12 months? Are things going to change? For instance, the connectivity, mm-hmm. that is always a problem in the maritime sector. And everybody has been talking about it for the last, I don't know, quite a few years now, on how this connectivity issue is not going to be a roadblock anymore, because we're just going to put up that many satellite, mm-hmm. that many nodes, to make sure that every ship is, I don't know, as connected as any land-based asset. Well, that has not happened.
No,
and it's still expensive, and it's still a serious challenge to get 2 megabytes of data out of the ship today. So I would say that, building something that is truly scalable operationally and commercially is something that you need to, that's something that needs to happen in the first 12 months. Now, there's the infamous thing from Amazon that, be obsessive to your customer needs.
Okay.
I would say that in our product, at least what Codex product is, or at least the customers that Codex is serving, is about truly understanding your customer pain, truly understanding what your customer wants to achieve. And it's not just about satisfying every single one of your customer. And this is an example that I keep telling people, and it's often put up quite lightly, is that if Carl Benz would have tried to satisfy all his users back in the early 19th century when he was developing a car, mm-hmm. he would have been more like a horse breeder than a mechanical engineer.
Yeah.
Because he would want to develop a horse that eat less, sleep less, get sick less and run faster, you know, throughout the day.
Yeah.
But Carl Benz did not. Carl Benz understood that limitation, that they wanted something more reliable. They wanted something more efficient. And hence he developed the first automobile.
Yeah.
And it is this that and it is this attitude, this mentality that we have to take to understand our customer one all the time, to be able to understand the nuance behind what they say, and really give them a product that will allow them to stay relevant for the foreseeable future. So the third thing is really to have a team that kind of pulls in a common direction, get bought into the vision totally. And I feel that and this is just such an enriching experience from building a startup, right? I would say that the first time when we build a startup, when we start hiring people to come in, at one point I start to realize that, wow, I've not seen 95% of these people ever in my life. And okay. You know, because we hired them from all walks of life, from all different industry and all that. And I had to put them in a room, and we had to then buy in a common shared vision that we want to develop a product that will allow our client to foretell when the machine is breaking down before it actually does.
And
you know, that sounds kind of like easy as I'm talking about it right now, but we have people who have never been on board of a ship.
Yes.
You know, and we have people who had never been next to an internal combustion engine before.
Yep.
You know, so going back to my startup being a sapling example, it's like you have this sapling breaking out of the earth for the very first time, and you have 30 expert gardener looking at that same sapling, and everybody has a very different idea about what that sapling needs.
Yep.
You know, whether it needs a bit more sunshine, whether it needs more saline water, I don't know. I know nothing about gardening. I'm just, you know, saying as I was thinking about it. But, you know, everybody comes in with their own idea.
Yep.
So that in itself is an incredible strength.
Yeah.
But also, you need to manage expectations and input, and you go like, guys, this is the common vision.
Yep.
We might have our own little different interpretation on how to get there.
Mm-hmm.
But the North Star is this. And it's not just about paying, what's the word to use for it? It's not just about acknowledging that verbally. You're going to have to buy into that idea wholeheartedly. It's most important.
Absolutely.
So one of the three things that is important to a startup is really building a scalable product, is going to be paying attention to what your customer wants and kind of see beyond that to build a product that they truly need. And of course, building a sensible team that able to pull in a common direction.
That's it.
And that's Codex.
So as we all know, COVID has been very difficult for every industry to work and to operate, but maritime has been affected greatly. We're part of 90% of all global trade. There's multiple shipping hubs. It's hard to get crew on the vessels. But Codex has been quite lucky in the sense that, you know, we're in Singapore. Most of our team is in Singapore. Singapore is one of the world's maritime hubs, a technology hub, a financial capital, and we have easy access to amazing local and foreign talent. So, Tinway, for new ventures specifically that are not in Singapore or are not in a strategic location like this, what are some concrete things you would recommend to them or advise them so that they have a chance at success, especially during times like COVID?
Move to Singapore. that would have been my advice. If you're lucky to be working out of a garage with four people and you're still fairly nimble, I think the world has in fact become effectively a smaller place in the last 18 months with COVID. And I think for me personally, while COVID is a huge, significant human tragedy, it has also been that, I wouldn't say necessary, but it's a catalyst to have kind of propelled the way we work, the way we organize ourselves socially. I mean, if you look at how we conduct our lives every single day prior to COVID, we have a 9 to 5, well, nobody has a 9 to 5 job now, but you know, you go to work generally about 9 mm-hmm. and you get off work about 6, 7 or whatever time you have. And then you get 2 days of off day. And that social arrangement has really never changed since the Industrial Revolution.
Yep.
You know, when the war engine is still kind of in operation and that kind of, you know, that kind of arrangement. Mm-hmm. And as you can imagine, in the 21st century, with digitalization, with automation, with video conferencing and all that, COVID-19 as an event has effectively changed the way we organize ourselves, the way we interact with people. And I think while where one is located is very important, mm-hmm. It has somewhat become less important in today's context. But I wouldn't want to undersell this and say, oh, if you are in somewhere that's really not plugged in, if you are really in somewhere where there's no ecosystem to make sure that your startup continues to thrive beyond having an excellent product, your access to customer, then you want to give yourself the best chance of success by relocating yourself to a place where your access to customer is better.
Yep.
But with regard to building a product, we've got to operate a kind of like a hub and spoke arrangement as to how your development talents are. COVID-19 has certainly changed the way how we organize ourselves even professionally. But your question is interesting for me also from a slightly different perspective. I think regardless of where you are located, regardless of what your ecosystem is, I think what is key for any startup to scale and thrive, no matter where they're located, is the first station to go to is really to maximize your existing product towards the existing market, you know? And this is kind of where everybody is. And I think, but what is important as a next step is leveraging on what you have as a product and try to find new use case for those products, aka going to adjacent spaces, adjacent industrial spaces, adjacent customer. And that's kind of like how Cortex is. You know, we started as a maritime analytics product where we're providing analytics into marine engines, marine auxiliary engines. But today we are already exploring the application of our product to land-based refinery, to land-based users who, just know 2 months ago, there was an operator of a smart city who came to us and said, you know what, you have an emission module, don't you? And I said, yeah, I mean, you know, we are currently detecting CO2, we're detecting SOx from the funnel head, and we're detecting all these things from the main engine. Oh, wow, I actually need that for my bus depot that I'm building somewhere. And it's kind of like how we find new life for our existing product in a new market, right? So beyond the second step, you then go into, well, now I'm in this new space. How should I, is there any opportunity for me to build a new product in the new space? You know, so you try to find like, oh, if I'm in this smart city, then what is it that I can build using my pool of talent that is currently in the company? And then, you know, hopefully one day you will be able to bring that relatively new product into your alma mater sector, the maritime sector.
Yep.
So I think kind of like how we scale as a startup, it's a circular affair that's continuously happening.
Mm-hmm. All right. Excellent. Thank you.
No problem.
Tinwei, thank you very much for joining us this morning on the second podcast, Cortex's Digital Shipping Podcast. It's been great to speak with you, to meet with the founder of Cortex, one of the original people that was there from conception to 3-4 years later to the team that we have here now, to the vessels we're on. I think this is going to be very insightful for current ventures that are looking to expand, new ventures that are looking to get into this really exciting, really rewarding space. It's been great to speak with you.
It's been a pleasure, and I'm so happy to be given the opportunity to share my venture building journey. I hope I haven't come to an end. it is a continuously learning affair for me, and I often say this to everyone that ever since I stepped off from the investment role of very hard assets back in 2018 into building digitalized product, I think it has been one big learning affair that you learn new things every single day, and it's so exciting to see how this world is so different from the one that I left behind. Mm-hmm. One that is predicated on putting the money where the steel is, okay. You know, traditionally, like what they say, and then now going back to the same people and getting them to put money where they can't see anything.
Exactly, data is.
Or data is, you know. So sometimes, we like to put in front of our customer that green matrix wallpaper that we see all the time, and we say that, well, this is literally what you're buying.
So are you Neo?
And I've taken the red pill. Okay. Nice meeting you today. It's been a very, it's been a wonderful experience.
Great, and I think I can speak for everyone here that we're very lucky to have you and be working with you at Cordex.
Thank you. Likewise. Cheers.